All right, so picture this. You're at a barbecue and someone's asking about your job, you know, the
The
usual.
classic, what do you do?
Right, exactly. And you say, well, I'm a lawyer. And of course, they hit you with, oh, so could you get someone off who's actually guilty?
Haha, yeah, the age-old question.
But now imagine this. The case involves murder, right? But your client, they never even touched the murder weapon.
Talk about a moral and legal dilemma, right?
That's exactly the kind of situation we're going to be diving into today with this case, Tyson v. Arizona.
A Supreme Court case that really makes you think about, well, where does accountability begin and end?
And where do felony murder and the death penalty, like, how do they all intersect?
This case really pushes you to think about those gray areas of the law. And in Tyson, we're looking at the story of two brothers, Ricky and Raymond Tyson. And they helped break their father, Gary Tyson, out of prison in Arizona.
Oh, wow. And just for context, their dad, wasn't he already serving a life sentence?
Yeah, for killing a prison guard during a previous escape.
So I'm sensing a pattern here. Not exactly a family known for playing by the rules. So they break their dad out of prison, and I'm guessing things go downhill pretty fast, right?
You could say that. Their car ends up breaking down, can you imagine?
Oh, no.
Middle of the Arizona desert. And, well, they encounter this family, the Lyons family, who stopped to help. And, well, it turns
I
tragic.
was afraid you were going to say that.
Yeah. Gary Tyson and his cellmate Randy Greenewalt, also a convicted murderer, by the way, they end up killing all four members of the Lyons family.
Okay, so we've got this horrific crime, but this is where it gets, I don't know, kind of murky, right? For the law.
Yeah.
Because the Tyson brothers, they were there, but they didn't actually participate in the murders.
Right, they weren't the ones who pulled the trigger.
So how in the world do they end up facing the death penalty?
Well, at the time, Arizona had this thing called a felony murder rule.
Okay.
Basically, it means that if somebody dies during a felony, and in this case, the felony was, you know, the prison break.
The escape, right?
Yeah, the escape. Anyone involved could be charged with murder, regardless of whether they actually caused the death.
So hang on. This is kind of like saying, you know, if I'm robbing a bank with a partner and that partner shoots someone, I'm just as guilty even if I never wanted anyone to get hurt.
You're getting to the heart of it, the legal dilemma here.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
And to make things even more complicated, there was already the Supreme Court case, Enman v. Florida, and that case said you can't execute someone who's like a minor accomplice if they didn't intend to kill.
So now we've got Enman seemingly contradicting what happened to the Tyson brothers.
Exactly. It's like, which one is it?
So the Supreme Court had to figure this out. Like, can they even give the death penalty if the defendants didn't actually kill anyone?
And this all boils down to this concept of felony murder.
Right. It's really tough because obviously the victim's family deserves justice.
Absolutely.
But then you have to consider, is it fair to give someone, you know, the most extreme punishment if they didn't kill anyone?
Or if they didn't even intend for anyone to die.
And that's what the Supreme Court had to figure out in Tyson v. Arizona. So what happened? Did they side with the idea that everyone involved in the felony is equally responsible, or did they go with a more nuanced approach?
Well, the court, led by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, they kind of tried to find a middle ground. They came up with a two-part test to determine if someone would be eligible for the death penalty in these situations.
Oh, okay. So a two-part test. Sounds like the Supreme Court's trying to draw some lines in the sand here.
Yeah, trying to be more clear.
So what were the two parts?
To get the death penalty, they said you had to have major participation in the felony and reckless indifference to human life.
Okay, major participation and reckless indifference. Those sound like phrases that could be interpreted in a lot of different ways.
You're not wrong. And let me tell you, those two little phrases, they caused a whole lot of debate and legal back and forth in the years that followed.
I bet they did. So break it down for us. What do those terms actually mean?
Okay, so first, major participation. What that means is you weren't just a bystander. You were, you know, seriously involved.
Like deeply involved.
Right, like the Tyson brothers, they were really involved in planning that prison break. They smuggled in guns, they armed their father and his cellmate, even helped overpower the guards.
Okay, so that's major participation. It's
Yeah.
more than just like being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, you've got to be taking actions that help make the crime happen.
Got it. And then there's reckless indifference, right?
Right. That gets into the defendant's state of mind. You know, were they thinking about the possible consequences?
Like, did they even care?
It means you knew your actions were creating a very real risk that someone could die, but you just didn't care.
So the court is saying, even if you didn't plan to kill someone, but you were part of this dangerous crime, you know,
Right, and you acted like you didn't care if someone died.
like, I don't care. can be just as bad as intending to kill in the eyes of the law.
Exactly. The Supreme Court reasoned that, you know, even though the Tyson brothers didn't intend to kill the Lyons family, they did things that made death, like, a very real possibility. And by being a part of it, they essentially showed what the court called a moral depravity that was basically the same as intending to kill.
Wow, that's a really powerful statement. So they're basically saying that level of I don't care is super serious. It can justify the most serious punishment.
Yeah. And the court also pointed out that, you know, lots of states already allowed for the death penalty in felony murder cases, even without intent to kill. So this decision, it wasn't like a radical departure from the norm. It was more about aligning the law with what a lot of people already believed, you know, that this kind of culpability deserves severe consequences.
I'm sure, though, that this decision didn't go unchallenged. Right. I mean, there's a lot of gray area, a lot of room for interpretation when it comes to defining reckless indifference and major participation.
Of course. And this is where we have to look at the dissent, because Justice Brennan and three other justices, they really disagreed with the majority opinion.
Yeah, I bet they did. What were their concerns? Did they think the court was like opening a Pandora's box?
Well, Brennan was basically saying that this decision, it totally weakened the protections that Edmund was supposed to give. He thought this new standard, it was just way too vague.
So he's worried that it would increase the number of people eligible for the death penalty, even if their role in the crime was less direct.
Right. Including maybe people who didn't really grasp how dangerous things were getting.
So Justice Brennan's raising the alarm saying, hey, you know, let's not make it too easy to send people to death row.
Right. And he argued that the punishment should fit the crime. He thought the Tyson brothers' sentences were too harsh, considering they didn't actually murder anyone, especially because in a lot of states back then, you actually needed intent to kill to get the death penalty for felony murder.
So he saw this as kind of an outlier, the Tyson case, worried about what it meant for future cases.
Yeah, exactly.
This case is really interesting. Because, I mean, on one hand, you want to hold people accountable for their actions.
Of course, especially when those actions lead to something so awful.
But then you have to make sure that the punishment, it makes sense.
Right, that it's fair and not too broad. It's a tough balance to strike. It really is. And that's exactly the question that Tyson v. Arizona makes us think about. How do we balance the need for justice with making sure the punishment is fair? How do we decide when someone deserves the ultimate punishment, even when they didn't personally take a life? And it's a question that still causes debate and legal challenges today.
And that's why we're doing this deep dive, right? To really get into these tough questions, to see how this case has impacted our legal system. So stick with us, folks. We're going to keep going deeper into the world of Tyson v. Arizona. Okay, so we've established that Tyson v. Arizona set this major precedent, but how does it actually work in the real world? Like, how have courts used this major participation and reckless indifference standard when dealing with real cases? It's one thing to talk about it theoretically, but it's different when it's, you know, impacting people's lives.
You're so right. It's all about how the theory gets applied in practice. Let's look at a 2023 gang case in California. It shows how Tyson is still relevant today. So in this case, a gang member was sentenced to death for a drive-by shooting, even though he wasn't the one who ordered it or even fired a weapon.
Wait, so how did they get a death sentence if he wasn't the shooter? That seems, I don't know, a bit of a reach.
That's where Tyson comes in. The prosecution argued that he was a major participant in the gang's activities, including planning and coordinating crimes, you know, and they brought evidence to show that he knew the gang was prone to violence, that he had access to weapons, and that he was even present at meetings where the shooting was discussed.
Oh, okay. So even though he didn't pull the trigger, they're saying his involvement was significant enough, and that because he was aware of the gang's violence, it showed reckless indifference to someone potentially dying.
Exactly. And the jury agreed. They found that he met the Tyson standard and sentenced him to death. It's a really stark example of how this case can be used to hold people accountable, even if they weren't the ones who physically committed the murder.
Yeah, it really highlights how much weight those two terms carry, major participation and reckless indifference. I mean, they can literally be the deciding factor between life and death.
Yeah, no doubt. It's like they're the key ingredients, you know, in the legal recipe for a death penalty conviction. And courts They have to consider all these different factors when applying Tyson. So, for example, they'll look at how much planning was involved. Was the person actively strategizing the crime, or were they just kind of there?
Oh, that makes sense. So the more planning involved, the more likely it is to be major participation.
Right. And then there's the question of whether the defendant was at the crime scene. Were they there when the murder happened? Did they see weapons? Did they hear threats?
Oh, wow. So it's more than just being at the crime scene. They have to figure out if the person knew about the potential for violence and just chose to ignore it.
Exactly. And it even goes beyond what happened before the crime. They also look at what the person did after. Did they try to help the victims, or did they just run and hide?
So it's like they're trying to figure out the defendant's attitude towards the whole thing. Did they care that someone died, or were they just indifferent?
You got it. It's about whether their behavior shows a real disregard for human life, you know, more than just a mistake or being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You know, this makes me think about how difficult it must be to be a juror in these cases. I mean, it's not just about guilty or not guilty, it's about like really intense judgments.
Absolutely. Tyson v. Arizona really puts a heavy burden on jurors to understand these subtle distinctions because they have to think about intent, knowledge. Could they have foreseen what was going to happen? It's a lot to ask of anyone to basically hold someone's life in your hands.
And it raises so many ethical questions. You want justice for the victims, for their families, but you don't want to punish someone too harshly if they weren't as directly involved.
Yeah, it's a real ethical dilemma. Tyson has caused so much debate about whether this standard is even fair. Some people argue that it makes it way too easy to give out death sentences to accomplices, even when, you know, they weren't as involved.
Yeah.
And it makes you think, are we blurring the lines between different levels of responsibility? And are we giving out punishments that are just too harsh?
I imagine the supporters of the Tyson standard would say it's important to make people responsible for what happens as a result of their actions, especially when innocent people lose their lives.
Yeah, they'd probably argue that if you're willingly part of something dangerous, you share the responsibility for any deaths that occur, even if you didn't kill anyone yourself.
Right, so it's about holding people accountable, sending a message that this behavior won't be tolerated.
Exactly. So it comes down to a big question. How much do you have to be involved in a crime to deserve the death penalty, even if you didn't kill anyone?
And that's not an easy question to answer. It's something that people have been debating for, well, forever. And legal systems all around the world are still trying to figure it out.
It really makes you wonder if the Tyson standard might be applied differently depending on the situation, right? Like, would it be different in a drug trafficking case versus a gang-related murder? Does the context matter?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. The type of crime should probably influence how the standard is applied.
And you're right, it does matter. The courts look at things like the nature of the felony, how much violence is normally associated with it, and what the person actually did. It's not a simple formula, you know, it's more nuanced than that.
So there's a lot of room for interpretation.
Exactly. And that's part of what makes Tyson v. Arizona so fascinating. It's not just a legal precedent, it's a reflection of our values as a society. How do we balance justice with fairness? It makes us confront some really difficult questions about our justice system and the choices we make about punishment.
It's definitely a case that makes you think about how the law impacts real people in such a profound way.
It really does. And honestly, we've only just scratched the surface of Tyson v. Arizona. There are so many layers to this case, and the conversations around it are far from over.
All right, so we've really dug into the Tyson case, how the Supreme Court decided, and even looked at how the Tyson standard works in actual cases. But let's bring it back to the courtroom. You know, for the lawyers and law students out there who might be working on these kinds of cases, felony murder, death penalty, what are the big takeaways from Tyson v. Arizona?
I think the most important thing to remember is that Tyson created this really important distinction between intent to kill and reckless indifference. And trust me, this is a huge point of contention for lawyers on both sides.
Can you break that down for us? What's the difference in practice, you know, when you're actually defending someone in court? How does it change the legal arguments?
Sure. Remember Enman v. Florida, that earlier case we talked about?
Yeah, the one that said you couldn't get the death penalty if you were just a minor accomplice and didn't intend to kill.
Right, exactly. So Enman said you needed intent to kill to get the death penalty, but then Tyson comes along and says, well, not always. You don't necessarily have to prove intent to kill to get a death sentence in a felony murder case.
Oh, wow. So that must make things much harder for defense attorneys. Like, now the prosecution has another way to try to get the death penalty, even if they can't prove intent.
Yeah, it definitely can. So defense attorneys really have to focus on challenging this idea of major participation. Was their client really a driving force in the felony, or were they more of a bit player? They have to really break down the details, you know. How much planning was there? Did they have any control over the victims? Did they have access to weapons? All those things matter when the court's trying to decide if someone was a major participant.
So it's not just about arguing that your client didn't want anyone to die. You have to show the whole picture, their role in the crime. Prove they weren't a major participant.
You got it. And then you've got the prosecutors, right? If they want to use Tyson to go for the death penalty, they have to prove reckless indifference. And that's not easy. They can't just show the defendant was careless. They have to show that, without a doubt, the defendant knew the risks and just didn't care.
How do they usually try to prove that? What kind of evidence are we talking about?
Well, they'll often try to show that the defendant was there when threats were made or when weapons were being shown off, or maybe they had a chance to walk away from the whole thing but didn't. Sometimes they might even try to show that the defendant has a history of ignoring the risk of violence. It's all about proving that the person knew what could happen but just didn't care. It's not easy to prove, but it can be done.
It's really interesting to see how these legal concepts play out in court. It's like a game of strategy, the prosecution and the defense both trying to use Tyson to their advantage.
And the stakes are incredibly high, right? We're talking about someone's life.
This really shows how important it is for lawyers to really understand the ins and outs of felony murder and the death penalty.
It's a very specific area of law, and the arguments they make can literally mean life or death for someone.
Yeah, and for law students who are learning about all of this, Tyson v. Arizona is a great example of how the law changes over time and how the Supreme Court deals with these really big questions.
It shows how one case can impact the entire legal system.
It really highlights that the law is always changing. It's not set in stone. Mm-hmm. It has to adapt as society changes and as new situations come up.
And cases like Tyson, they make us face these really tough questions about the kind of society we want and how we want to handle justice.
Well said. Any final thoughts for our listeners as we wrap up this deep dive into Tyson v. Arizona? What's the one thing they should remember about this case?
I think Tyson leaves us with this big question, something we all need to think about. When is someone deserving of the ultimate punishment, even if they didn't kill anyone themselves? There's no easy answer, but it's a question we as a society can't ignore.
It's a heavy question, no doubt, but it's important. Tyson v. Arizona forces us to look at the death penalty, at what it really means to be responsible for a crime, and at what justice really means. And that's what we try to do here on The Deep Dive, to explore these complex issues and get you thinking. Thanks for listening.